Welcome, welcome to the best 5-minute podcast with Forrest Kelly.
Hi there, I'm Melissa Allen. I am the director of winery operations for Simple Theory Wine Co. in Frederick, Maryland.
The best 5-minute wine podcast.
The first question I've got, we got a lot to get to, but the first question I have is the I love design work, and your logo is a mathematical equation, right?
It is. It is. Yeah. So it's open parentheses, like a open bracket, and it says it's simple with a line as if it was a dividing line with theory beneath it, and then outside of the parentheses is an exponent with a V. We have people asking what the V is about. Is the V a verb, which is the first time I heard that once we opened. But for us, it's either vineyards or variable. Technically, right now, we're Simple Theory Wine Co., but we have a plan, 10-year plan, to expand to a 40-acre lot we just purchased at the beginning of 2024. So at the point, we'll have Simple Theory Vineyards as well. But I am a huge nerd, and I love that about myself. And working with our designer, he fed into and could feel exactly how much of that resonates in the way that I talk about wine. And he wanted to find a way to kind of bring that forward when he created the brand.
We've got that. Now we can move on to the serious stuff. Okay, let's find out about this nerd. Where, give us a little bit of background, your educational background that kind of led you to this point.
So in 1976, my grandparents, Jack and Seal, for some reason bought a 230-acre dairy farm in the middle of Maryland. And they are from Brooklyn and Queens. They're first generation American. One of them's my grandfather's German Swiss. My grandmother is Italian. And they bought a 230-acre dairy farm. They had been making wine in their basement in Brooklyn growing up. My great grandfather gave up making wine when he was 82. Handed the equipment down to my grandmother now that they were on this farm. And my grandfather said, well, we know how to make wine. We have grapes in the ground. And now we have the equipment, which was two hand crank crushers and a press. Let's go commercial. And so they converted this 230-acre dairy farm into a winery. And that was in 1976. So that winery is Linganore Wine Cellars, which is one of the largest in the state of Maryland. We're almost 50 years old. And I started working here when I was about seven, or started working there when I was about seven. It was one of those things where it's whatever a seven-year-old can do. I put capsules on bottles. I was actively involved in signing people up for tours, eventually giving tours, working in the cellar after school, during harvest, cleaning equipment, inoculating tanks. And all of that led for a passion and drive to go and learn how to make wine. And so I put my focus on getting into a viticulture enology school. This was in 2009 when I graduated high school. So in that fall of 2009, I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to go to Cornell University. And I have my degree in viticulture enology from Cornell. Graduated in 2013. During my time there, I spent some time working at wineries in New York, obviously being right there in the Finger Lakes. I worked at a winery in Indiana, in Illinois, Napa. And then after graduation, I worked in New Zealand and Oregon as well. And I decided in 2017 to come back full time to help run my family's winery. But then about 2.5-3 years ago, we had this idea about trying to add on to the legacy. So we've got a nice running ship right now, but we wanted to find a way to really kind of highlight the change that we've seen in Maryland wine and in the climate that we have here over the last 30 years. So we went through the path to open up Simple Theory, which just opened in December 2024.
And looking back, aren't you glad that you went into wine rather than the dairy part that you were drawn to?
I'm very, very glad.
I could just picture you as a seven-year-old with a glass of wine on a stool and you're sitting there milking the cow, the dairy cow.
My dad likes to make the joke that a winery smells better than a dairy farm ever would.
And I've worked on a dairy farm and yeah, see, it doesn't smell like fresh milk. Let's just say that.
No, it does not. Yeah.
When did your grandparents make the transition from, okay, we're done with dairy, we're going to go to wine?
They did. It was in the early 80s. They sold off all the animals and went straight and really focused on the wine at that point. So actually growing up, I wanted to be a secretary.
A secretary?
Yeah, a secretary.
Do you remember a point in your conversation with your grandparents that you could see kind of the light switch in their eyes and seeing that you had this passion and you had the knowledge and the wherewithal and they could kind of touch you and go, okay, we're letting you take over?
Great question. So actually growing up, I wanted to be a secretary because we had this secretary that worked for the winery.
A secretary?
A secretary, yes. But we had a secretary who worked for the winery. Her name was Miss Carol, and she was so kind to my brother, to me, when we had a great relationship with her, and she got to work with my dad every day. And so I wanted to have a job where I got to work with my dad every day. And I was like, that sounds perfect. But I grew up in the industry, right? So we'd go to the events. We'd meet the other winemakers. You know, I knew the other people in the industry, you know, through Maryland, Virginia, up to New York and Pennsylvania. And every single one of them was an old white guy. And so nobody ever told me I couldn't do it, but I never saw someone that looked like me. And it wasn't until I was about 10 when I was in my grandparents' house and on the coffee table, you know, they had the Wine Business Monthly, you know, circular, the magazine there. And on the front page, on the cover, was Gina Gallo. And not many 10-year-olds know about the Gallo family, but when you grow up in the wine industry, you know about the Gallo family. And my grandmother was like, do you know who that is? And I said, I have no idea. She's like, that is Gina Gallo. She's the winemaker at Gallo. And her grandparents started Gallo, much like your grandparents started Linganore. And at that point, I was like, bing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, she was literally the reason that I thought that women could make wine, because nobody had told me otherwise, but I didn't see a role model in, you know, fulfilling that role here on the East Coast. So when I applied to go to Cornell, there were no women winemakers in Maryland. And I think we're at like over almost around 10 right now out of the 100 wineries, which is a pretty good ratio. So I'm really glad that that's the situation that we're at.
You obviously got into Cornell, but was it difficult? I mean, that's a pretty prestigious school.
It was. Yeah, it's a good question. You know, the proclaimed nerd in me, like I was a pretty pretty good student, and getting into Cornell, I was so pleased and so excited that day I got the acceptance letter. And it was a tough call because it was between Cornell and UC Davis. Those were the two schools. Yeah. You know, I'd gotten into all the enology schools I applied to, and you know, all seven of them in the United States at the time. And it was a tough call because Davis has a reputation. Cornell was just starting out their undergrad program, but they'd had a grad program for a while. So it's just starting out their undergrad program. The winemaking and the way that you grow grapes, everything is different on the East Coast than it is on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I was really, really afraid about going out West and learning West Coast techniques and not being able to apply it to the challenges that we face here, that it's just so different than what's faced out in California. I would say, like, my time at Cornell, some of my easiest classes were actually the winemaking classes, because the ones like in the major, because I've been doing it for most of my life at that point. So I had practical knowledge, and then I was just adding the theory behind it, but then the theory made sense. So I was like, oh, well, that's why I use this pump like that. Or, oh, that's how this, you know, I just didn't know the theory behind why it is that I was taught to do it like this. The more difficult classes were the ones outside of my major, but I had a great time regardless.
You did your internship. And you went to New Zealand and you went to wineries, you know, went to Napa, you went to wineries all over the world. Do you have a favorite memory from going to those different wineries?
I think one of my favorite memories was my last harvest I worked that I was as an intern. I worked at Grand Marine in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. And it's a very small winery. It's owned by Kendall Jackson, but it's a lot of fun because it's one of their pet project wineries. So they have a lot of cool toys and a small batch. And I was in charge of the barrel haul that harvest. And so I had, I think, 700 barrels that I filled and organized and stacked, you know, perfectly. But at the end of filling it, your day of filling barrels, I had to go up and I had to clean the tank out. And this one day, it was near the end of harvest, by like late October, the winemaker comes out and he goes, listen, I'll make you a deal. I'll clean that tank for you as long as you'll foot tread these grapes for me. And I was like, I don't know, Shane, it's pretty cold out. I'm not sure I'm going to actually want to do that. He's like, I'll sweeten the deer with some after work libations. I was like, okay, I'm in. And so I hopped into a 3-ton tank of Pinot Noir, pulled some shorts out of my backpack and started foot treading a tank of Pinot Noir instead of cleaning a tank of lees. So that was probably one of the most memorable experiences I had.
Why he was just bored with doing it, or why did he make that deal with you?
the sentence he told me is because I had great legs, which is a whole other conversation, but we'll go with that.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. What guys will do to get out of work sometimes.
That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. The website is simpletheorywines, that's plural, .com. Mm-hmm. And just going to learn about you a little bit. And then, I was going to ask this, and I'll ask it now. How many times do people misspell your last name?
All of the time. I don't even say it. I just spell it for them. Like if someone needs to write it down, I just spell it first and then I'll say it after the fact.
Oh, yeah, my whole life, it's yeah. Forrest, they spell it with one R and I've got to tell him. So I understand totally. Now I think I'm going to do that now. That's good advice. Thank you for that advice.
Sure.
Because it's A-E-L-L-E-N. A-E-L-L-E-N. Yep. It's pronounced Allen, right?
Yeah, just Allen.
Okay.
My dad likes to say it's two E's, two L's, it's German Swiss, it's correctly misspelled.
There you go. Correctly misspelled. I like it. Okay, so yep. Put everything, encapsulate everything that you are about. You've got this great quote that's talking about climate change. And I always cringe kind of saying that word because everybody's got a preconceived notion of what it is. But you boiled it down very well. Can you repeat that quote for us?
Sure. Everyone hears about climate change in the news, but I find it is most commonly seen by and impacts those who work with the land. We can grow grapes here and now that my family could not grow 30 years ago because our climate has changed significantly with hotter summers and milder winters.
And the picture is there with, what's the dog's name?
Her name's Echo.
Echo. Okay. She's still with us?
She is. Yep. She actually just saw her running through the field a second ago.
Oh, that's awesome. She's having a great time. That's kind of the theory where you kind of branched away from what your grandparents were doing and you've started the simple theory?
Yeah, there's branched away is one way to look at adding on to a legacy is another. You know, I'm still very actively involved, but the ability for us to ripen, let's talk Cabernet Sauvignon for a second. 30 years ago, when we put Cabernet Sauvignon in the ground, we could ripen it 1-2 out of 10 years. Our summers weren't that hot. Our winters were really cold. So we had a lot of cold damage and vine kill. Now we're ripening Cabernet Sauvignon is 8 out of 10 years. We can ripen Cab Franc 7 out of 10 years. It's a little more difficult for us here. Chardonnay, we couldn't even get to ripen. We used to grow a hybrid called Chardonnay, and now we ripped Chardonnay out. We've had Chardonnay in the ground for the last 15 years. So there's just been so much change in our climate and our ability. I'm sitting here looking at our Petit Verdot vineyard right now, and the fact that we have 1.5 acres of Petit Verdot that ripens beautifully every single year. You know, that wouldn't have been the case 30 years ago.
So you guys are dry farmed? Is that correct?
We are. Yeah, 100% dry farmed. I've never worked an irrigation system before in my life.
And then solar powered, one single vineyard, sustainably crafted, and then please recycle. Of course, that's your environmental stewardship.
Of course.
Explain then now the Simple Theory wines are produced in a 100% solar powered facility. How did that come about?
Yeah, great question. In 2022, so Simple Theory wines are produced at the parent winery, you know, Linganore Wine Cellars, my grandparents. You're the one that started. We're producing here now. And in 2022, my dad found some grants from the federal government to help us install 743 solar panels. And we built a new warehouse. We built it with a specific slope to the back, to the roof. So it's south facing with a large surface area for panels. And then we have two arrays that sit in farmland. That's too steep for us to farm, so we would never be able to plant there. And so all of that together actually produces so much power. It powers the entire property, and then our energy company pays us a check every year in addition, because we're basically a power plant, so they have to pay us the amount of power we put on the grid. I think it was like 2 weeks ago, we actually just hit 1 gigawatt of power production since 2022.
Was there any pushback within the family and for doing all of this, or any surprises?
The only pushback in the family was just the initial cost. But as soon as we found, you know, grants to kind of help put it in, and we looked at the return, I mean, we're talking like a 5-7 year return on an investment, it is a no-brainer. You know, my uncle's less angry about the lights being left on now than he was before.
Yeah.
We need to make this vineyard fantastic. Otherwise, we need to rip it out because I'm tired of working with underripe, difficult to use fruit.
Dry farmed. Now, not only does that mean that you don't use any excess non-natural watering, but the minimal mowing, this is what I love too, because you're worried about bugs. Now, fill us in about that.
Oh, certainly. I mean, there are plenty of bad bugs out there, but there are plenty of good bugs that eat the bad bugs. So the more that you disturb the land, the more you disturb any sort of bug population that could be, you know, in your, you know, in your row planting, whatever sort of cover crop you have there. So putting in cover crops that, you know, don't require a lot of mowing, or mowing less if they do require it, you know, keep those bug populations higher for the ones that are actually going to help us fight against, you know, we've got a bug out here called the grapevine berry moth, you know, but there are other bugs that can help eat that, and to keep those populations under control, which just means less spray and less tractor passes, which is less soil compaction, which then allows for more bugs. You know, it's all this cyclical nature of sustainability within a vineyard. It's not just a no spray mean, or no mowing means everything's better. You know, everything has to fall into its own cycle.
And you do this all on site with the family and the staff? You do everything? You don't outsource anything?
Nope. It's all grown and made right here with our staff and our team. Yep.
How many wines do you have? You produce 6, 10, 50, 100? How many?
We're at 12 right now. Okay. Which is a nice manageable number. We've got three more. We've got a Merlot coming out in about a month. And then we have two more Bordeaux blends coming out in about 8 months.
The whole thing started in 2024, right? When you started producing.
Yeah, we started producing because we knew that we were going to launch this. We started producing in 2022. For this project, but we didn't open until December of 2024.
So out of these wines, from your Albarino 2023 all the way down to the unoaked Chardonnay 2023, mm-hmm. Are there highlights? Or all of them? You're proud of all of them, obviously, but some, what's your favorite?
Yeah, man, you can't ask the winemaker their favorite wine. No. I would say my favorite right now is actually our Barbera. There's been a lot of success. There's about three or five vineyards in the state right now that are growing and working with Barbera. We've really loved having it on our property. The 2022 is specifically a fun one. It's actually on a kind of challenging site. It's about 18% slope, and it's got a tree line that's not ours to manage. So we get a lot of shade in the morning, which just causes delayed ripening and uneven ripening. And in 2022, my uncle is our vineyard manager, and I went out and I said, Eric, we need to make this vineyard fantastic. Otherwise, we need to rip it out because I'm tired of working with underripe, difficult to use fruit. And so he went and trimmed all the vines down to 6 clusters per vine. So we lost over half of it, but it just ends up this big, punchy, bold Barbera that's at this point, you know, now almost 2.5 years old. It's just so smooth, and the red fruits just pop like no other. It's a wonderful wine, a wonderful wine. But I think from the nerdy part, my favorite to talk about is the Blanc de Blanc and our pet Matt. That was actually the same Chardonnay grapes from the same lot, picked the same day, pressed together, settled together, and then put into two different tanks for fermentation, but using the same yeast, and the kinetics were almost the same between the two tanks. And one of those tanks ended up as Pet Nat, put down at 0.3 Brix remaining, and the other one was fully finished and then went through a full traditional method, Champenois, for carbonation to make the Blanc de Blanc. So basically, it's an experiment about two different ways to take one lot of fruit and turn into two completely different styles of sparkling wine. That's the nerd experiment person inside of me.
Going back to the, how do you pronounce it? Barbera?
Barbera, yep.
And it was your uncle?
Yeah, my uncle.
Okay. So when you told him to trim the vines on the Barbera, did he give you like, what are you talking about? And you were saying, no, this is what I want. And then he said, do you think that he kind of went radical on you just to prove a point? Like, okay, she wants them trimmed. I'm really going to go for it.
Yes, he is very competitive like that. So 100%, that is exactly how that went down. He's getting a little closer to retirement. He doesn't spend as much time, you know, hand labor in the vineyard. It's usually, you know, he'll tell the team to take care of it. And maybe he's on the tractor spraying or, you know, something to that effect. But no, for this one, it was all him. He didn't let anyone else take care of this plot. It was just him. He was going to prove me that it didn't make a difference. And it was an absolutely amazing wine. And now it's the protocol pretty much year after year.
Yep. Yeah, it's always fun to go neener neener, doesn't it?
It's a tricky one when you've got, you know, the inside winemakers and the outside grape growers, which we have to work together because all quality starts in the vineyard.
Just interviewed Rasmus Emborg, who put out the book Rosé Revolution, and looking at your rosé, oh my gosh, that is, it's so, I mean, I'm not a big fan of pink. My wife loves pink, but it's just beautiful in color.
Yeah, thank you. We actually use a hybrid grape for this. It's called Chamberson. And Chamberson's a really interesting grape to work with in the cellar because it has a lot of color and almost no tannins. And then coupled with the almost no tannins, it has a lot of protein. So all as soon as you crush the grapes, basically the protein is free in the juice and the tannins start seeping out of the grape and it binds to itself. All the tannins fall out and all you left is this beautiful, rich, deep color. We actually get all of our color extraction in 45 minutes, basically from breaking the skins at pick to press. And that's the 45-minute extraction period.
So if I'm a visitor to the winery for the first time, what do I see?
So we have about 80 acres of vines across four different blocks. This is Linganore, though. So simple theory, although brainchild from Linganore, there's no simple theory here at Linganore. There's very little connection talked about it. It's only the connection that I'm like controlling, if that makes sense. But the rolling hills, open fields, grapevines, obviously deer fencing. We have lots of deer out here. And then we have a turn of the century 1900s barn that I'm currently sitting in that has been converted into our tasting room. And then the top floor of that bank barn is actually our banquet hall. And you're just sitting here and like overlooking these fields. We've got a small bandstand for the weekends, food trucks and grapevines everywhere. You see my grandma's house at the top of the hill here. She still lives here. So.
Oh, awesome. So she can watch your progress.
Definitely. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Got a picture of the vineyards. Now tell me about Simple Theory.
So when you come into Simple Theory, we're actually located on the second floor in downtown Frederick. So Frederick is a bustling city. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Bend, Oregon, if you've ever been up there before. It's a very, very quaint. It's about 70,000 people. We've got a nice creek that flows through it. The tasting lounge is on the second floor of the main street, which is called Market Street. And you come up an elevator and it opens to this black and white themed, sleek tasting lounge. And as much as I want to say tasting room, I want to get the idea of you're in there, there's a bachelorette party and you're squeezed in and you're trying to do eight wines in 15 minutes at a bar. Like everyone's got a seat. Everyone's got their sofas and coffee tables, high tops for the best people watching in Frederick. And it's all table service. You're tasting. You can have the table for 2 hours. Wines by the glass, by the bottle. And then I love food, so I made the food menu is actually a build-your-own charcuterie. So we've got different size options depending on how hungry you are, and then different categories where you can pick the food, the charcuterie options to add to your board.
How long do people, when they come into the downtown location, how long can they spend? A couple hours?
Yep, a couple hours. Usually the tasting itself is five wines. That lasts about 30 to 45 minutes. And you can just make a reservation to just hold a table for 2 hours if you want to come have a nice bottle of wine and some bites.
Staffing can be a problem in today's business, but I'm sure you've got an all-star staff. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I'm running all operations, but then downtown we have our DTC sales manager. Her name's Alicia. She's been fantastic. She runs all of the ins and outs of scheduling and staffing and food and all that sort of thing. And then we have six part-time employees. And one of the things that I really wanted to do with Simple Theory is I wanted to make wine accessible. I think wine is easily stuck in this paradigm where most people who aren't already drinking it find it intimidating. And so I want it to be simple in theory because wine is simple in theory. It's easy to spend too much time nerding out about it and making it really difficult for people who have no idea how to even start looking at a wine list. They don't have no idea where to go. And so beer and spirits are just so much more accessible. And so one of the things that I really love about our staff is that they're well-trained in wine and they can meet you where you are. If you're a novice, this is your first time ever tasting wine, they'll walk you through kind of the basics and what you can learn and where you can go. And if you've been doing this for decades, they'll meet you there too. They'll nerd out with you about the weird tannin protein interaction that happens in Chamberson. I would say the one that was difficult was trying to figure out where to...
The best 5-minute wine podcast.
Ooh, helps you in making the wine? Is that all you, or?
No, I wish it was. If I had all the time in the world, I would just be a winemaker. But I spend more of my time these days out of the cellar, especially outside of harvest, than in the cellar. During harvest, I'm in the cellar all the time. But outside of harvest, I'm all over the place. So our head winemaker, his name is Ray Mitchum, and he's been working with the family for over 10 years now. And he's spent some time out at Davis and then was working at a winery in Pennsylvania for a few years, was for several years, and then came down here, like I said, about 10 years ago. And so he currently manages our entire wine program, and we have several great cellar workers, of course, vineyard, and my dad is Anthony, and he is our executive winemaker and still very involved in everything that happens in the cellar. And
has there been an obstacle putting this whole thing together from just starting to now that you thought, I don't know if I can overcome this obstacle, or what are we going to do?
Wow, that's a great question. I expected the obstacle to be permitting, just because alcohol laws are annoying and we don't have easy alcohol laws in Maryland. Like, we still don't have wine in grocery stores here, right? Like, it's kind of difficult out this way.
What? No wine in grocery stores?
There's no alcohol at any grocery stores. You have to go to a liquor store.
Wow. Hello, 1952.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
What? We don't even need to go, because I'm sure you've asked all the questions and why that restriction is. But anyway, okay. So now we got a reference point. When you say permits, you thought might be a problem. I can see why.
Yeah, I thought that might be the problem. And admittedly, it did. So we're not allowed to have two locations in Maryland either. So a winery can have a winery location, but we can't open a downtown tasting lounge or anything like that. So we had to go through a whole setup in order to open Simple Theory, which is fine because it's its own business anyway. But I would say the one that was difficult was trying to figure out where to, you know, we've spent 50 years running a winery on a farm with vineyards, and we know how to run that model. And you're looking at land nearby and options and, you know, the amount of investment. And I modeled the idea of Simple Theory off my time in McMinnville, Oregon, and in Sonoma and Napa. And it just, in my mind, it just made sense. Why don't we put a tasting room where the people are?
Yeah.
And we've decided to go with a downtown location that was easily renovatable, and all we needed to do was to move wine there. And that was pretty simple. But it took us a minute to, as a family, agree that that was what made the most logical next step.
Yeah, you said you're one of 10 female-owned wineries in Maryland?
Mm-hmm.
Out of a
in Maryland, yeah.
Yeah, I got a feeling that you're going to make progress on that, getting wine into the grocery store somehow, some way.
Yeah, it is. It's a tricky one. You know, there was a talk about it legislatively that came up earlier this year. Obviously, the liquor stores are against it because they would lose their sales. The distributors are kind of mostly against it as well, and the restaurants are against it because it's just more convenient, less alcohol sales at restaurants. So there's, you know, for once, all of us, you know, are kind of on one side of the table, which usually we're, you know, legislatively usually have very differing opinions.
So 2025 and beyond, you've got a lot going on. What is your ultimate goal? Do you have one?
Yeah. So our ultimate goal is, About this time last year, we bought 40 acres of land just down the street from the Linganore Home Winery and the vineyard base. And so starting actually in May, we're going to start planting these no spray and low spray hybrids out of Germany and Italy to kind of give them a shot and see if we can really reduce our climate input even more. And not only will it help with tractor passes, but obviously we'll reduce our spray costs, the amount of sprays into the environment. So we're going to start planting that this coming May. And then the idea is the site is beautiful. It has two lovely ravines. And so we'd like to take one of the ravines and turn it into an underground, like, wine cave tasting lounge. So that will be the Simple Theory Vineyard site. That's like a 10-year plan. We'll be able to build that out is what we're looking for. All right. So you can find us online at our website, simpletheorywines.com, or you can use both Simple Theory Wines for both Facebook and Instagram to find us online. I think the best reason to come visit us in downtown is to escape the bustling streets, understand, learn more about what we're doing out here with Maryland Wine, and just really support local businesses.
The best 5-minute wine podcast.
Don't forget my favorite part.
Oh, please, please like and follow.
And you can like and follow us on our social media and join in our collaborations, just like our website, thebestwinepodcast.com, on Insta, X, you know where, The Best Wine Pod. The Best Wine Pod.